This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Lead singer of Mouse Rat.
Yeah, that's right. Lead singer of Mouse Rat.
How's everybody doing?
Good. Good.
Stuff looks right. Amazing. Yeah. Everything we see today.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Yeah. It does, right? I hope. Yeah, I think that's...
Stepping into a world like this, is part of the kick just learning to play with everything and handle it well and look like you live in that space?
Yeah, I guess that's part of it. I think that's definitely part of it. You know, and I think you're talking about, like, the props and the toys and the sets and the costumes. I mean, yeah, that's definitely a part of it. But all that stuff makes my job pretty easy, actually. Well, it's not easy, but it makes it much easier, you know, because it's doing a lot of the work. The props, the costume, the mask, the guns, everything that distracts a viewer's attention from me, I invite. So, like... Just in case I fuck it up, please just look at the cool guns.
Oh, piggybacking off of that question, we were at the props, and they said that they sent you the blasters. What was it like the first time you got your blasters?
They sent me the guns, or they sent me a gun, and I think they wanted to see how it matched up against my hand. But at the time, all I was worried about is I'm going to send them pictures of me holding this gun, and they're going to think I'm too fat and fire me. That's all I remember thinking. I was, like, still very much in the process of losing weight. So I was, like, sucking it in, holding the gun. My wife was like, "You look uncomfortable in this photo." I am. God. And immediately, I sent them the photo, and then, like, immediately after, they were like, "Hey, by the way, we need to come get your sizes again." I was like, I know you do. So, but it was pretty neat. I mean, they're definitely awesome props, and it's funny because we have a great prop department here, and they're purists, so some of them are a little reticent to accept the 3D printer into their world because they make practical props and they build stuff out of nothing, out of little parts, and they tinker and stuff like that. And so I think the idea of a 3D printer is a little bit scary because, you know, it's like the printing press. I don't know. It's new and exciting that they use it because this stuff looks amazing.
How really are you balancing the scheduling with the TV show with this? How's that working out?
Well, that was all something that NBC and Marvel worked out beforehand before I was able to... As we were, like, finalizing the details of my deal, they said, you know, we'll let him out for some episodes, but he does have to come back. And they, you know, NBC was awesome to let me out, and I'm missing probably 6 episodes. But I did, they came out here to London, and we did a couple of episodes out here in London. And also I went back for a 10-day stretch in August. And did another episode, so I've been going back and forth a little bit and making it work. And then when I wrap on this, I'll just go immediately back onto the show.
I imagine it's difficult to balance the being a badass and being super funny in the film too, because they said this is their funniest.
Wait, by being a badass, you're talking about Andy Dwyer, right?
Star Lord.
No, they're both super badass, so it's really easy.
were there any characters that you kind of were inspired by or looked back on and said I'd kind of like to be sort of in that realm?
With Peter? With the Peter Quill character? I guess so. I mean, I think you'd think going into something that, as an actor, you would take performances that you've seen before and want to try to take influence off of it, but I don't know that that's not necessarily what I did. I know some actors probably work that way, but I've heard Kevin say that he thought the stuff that he's looking at, he thought it was like Han Solo meets Marty McFly or something.
That's cool. Yeah.
But that wasn't an intentional thing at all. Yeah. I mean, I think you kind of... The truth is, I think, at least with me, is I know that me personally, I'm different than anyone else, just like, you know, our mothers all tell us that we're all very special and unique, and we are. And I think people, if an actor can stick to trying to make the character resemble something from their own spirit, it'll automatically be unique, and it's not necessarily going to be trying to be Han Solo or trying to be Marty McFly or trying to be any other character that you've seen before. It's like, no, this is this is going to be just me, sort of in this role.
Has there been a like more surreal day on set than others, like where you're kind of standing in the middle of chaos and?
Yes, our Morag set. We have a set for a place called Morag. Is mind blowing, and there was another day in something called. Oh, I don't want to give this away. Am I giving stuff away?
We saw a ton of art.
Oh, you did.
Okay, we know.
And we're embargoed for 8 years anyway.
Yeah. No, there's something called the Kiln, which is another set, and there was a day. Yeah, there was one surreal day when we had a second called Michael. He's this direct. He's a guy who's worked with Stanley Kubrick. I mean, he's been around for. Ages. You could sit and listen to this guy talk about working on movies. He's worked in the business for like 50 years. Wow. And he was doing crowd control on 160 extras, all of whom had gone through extensive alien makeup. And we're on a set that's maybe about as big as this warehouse that we're in right now, but maybe even taller. And there are prison cells all the way around, a giant tower in the middle. And there's this long, look, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about this. There's this long crane.
That was in the sizzle reel we saw this morning where James was talking about the
shot. That long one shot that was put together. And I'm watching this. I'm watching Michael, who's worked with Stanley Kubrick, directing these extras, saying, "Remember, if the camera can see you, or if you can see the camera can see you. You are in a prison. You are not happy." And then we're walking through, and there's a long, this long like dolly and crane shot that's on our backs, and then lifts up. And then circles around, you see a fight break out, and then you see it pans down to a second level, and you see these ominous prisoners grab someone and drag them into a cell. And then it goes down even further, and you're seeing details of which I don't want to give away, but you'll know this shot. It was so surreal because the shot ends on my face looking around, taking it all in, and then it quickly cuts out. And that moment, it's been 5 months of moments like that. It's really, really crazy. I'm like, how much does this cost per second, I wonder?
To kind of go a little bit in depth about the character, I mean, this is a guy that's half human, half alien. I mean, we know the movie starts on Earth, but like sent mostly in space. I'm kind of curious, is the character more informed by who he was on Earth, or is he more informed by who he has become in space?
No, I think... he's at this point, he's definitely more informed by who he was on Earth.
Okay.
And especially, like, I really like it's the arc of the character. It's a very human arc. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a person. It's really based on who he was and what was taken from him as a kid and something that he missed and lacks that he has to gain through the course of the movie. That's definitely what we're focusing on.
Yeah.
I know that.
Actually, just quickly to interject, how old is he when he leaves Earth?
When he leaves Earth, he's a kid.
Okay.
He's like 9 or 10.
Okay.
He's like a kid. And so, was that a spoiler?
We saw in the art room that there's a kid with a ship. And
No, no, no. He's a 30-year-old. He has a pituitary issue. He's a 30-year-old kid, 4'3" kid. Man. No, yeah. He's about 9 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's... And you get to see the origin of who he is and why he is the way he is when you meet him as an adult later in space.
To kind of go off of that, in the sizzle at Comic-Con that we resaw today, you know, you say, "I'm Star-Lord," and Koreth says, "Who?"
Yeah.
And obviously that's also going to be a lot of the general public reaction to who Star-Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that benefited you as far as being able to make this character your own and how you developed him?
That was actually, that idea was a collaboration, I think, because like, I don't think in the original incarnation of this or the original script that it was, I remember reading it and my thought was like, why is he just saying "I am Star-Lord"? And I talked to James, and I was like, maybe it should be this moment where it's like, who is that? And I feel like that was something we collaborated on. But what's great is the stakes of what happens in the movie legitimizes this nickname he'd love to have himself be called. Like, so I don't want to give it away too much, but you see why he's called Star-Lord in this movie.
But is the fact that the general public that's going to be watching this movie and being introduced to these characters really for the first time, where, you know, Iron Man, Captain America, those are names that most people knew going in, especially Captain America at least. Is that a benefit to you as an actor, making the character your own?
I don't necessarily know if it affects me one way or another. I mean, I guess, I think it makes sense that, I mean, it's a good question. I think it probably is helpful that people don't know who he is, because it would be my intention to want to make this my own anyways. And so I think, but I feel like that's something that, you know, Robert Downey Jr. did with Iron Man, was he kind of came in and he is Tony Stark, and he kind of is now, because he's got, like, he could probably afford, like, weapon systems, and, like, the guy could probably seriously build his own suit now with all the money he's making, that really kind of, I mean, but to be honest, I don't know Robert Downey Jr., but I'm just assuming, I don't even know him, so maybe that's not how he is at all. Maybe he has a British accent and, like, is a totally different person than Tony Stark, but it's, to me, it seems like it's Robert Downey Jr. is Tony Stark. And so, and he was a guy that people obviously knew Iron Man, maybe not as much as, like you said, Captain America and other characters, but that was something that I would like to be able to try to do, is just be, keep it real and keep it close to who I am, and maybe the fact that no one knows these characters, that'll be helpful. And it probably would be helpful, because, like, you look at, like, the Star Wars that came out, the prequels that came out, like, there's a lot of expectations there, and that's to shoulder a project with, like, preconceived notions, expectations, and all these things, is really makes it difficult. It makes it difficult because you spend the whole movie trying to, like, satisfy what people think they know about a character. And it's, you know, the very first Star Wars didn't have that problem, because it was all brand new. It was like, you just take it for what it is. So basically, what I'm saying is, we'll be better than Star Wars.
Do you have, a character other than yourself who you're a big fan of, your favorite?
In this story?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I really think this, I mean, Drax is awesome. Not only the character, but Dave Bautista, the actor. I just really adore him so much, and he's very, very good and so unique. I just really love him. And I think Rocket is a great character, and not just in a way that you would think. I mean, like, there's a lot of heart there. James did a great job of looking at Rocket as a real character rather than a cartoon character. And so when you see the story unfold, there's going to be some, you should feel bad for anything that was kind of created out of nothing. Like, there's a sense of loneliness and this inner pain that Rocket feels, that hopefully the audience will empathize with, that makes him a really sympathetic character, but also so badass because he's a raccoon with a machine gun. So that's good. I like him. I mean, all the characters are really great, but those two probably in particular right now.
Cool. So much of the film is about building an ensemble that works together by the end. Have you, in terms of the ensemble of the cast, it's such an amazing group of people and such a eclectic group to put together. Have you seen that really happen over the course of the film? That you guys have come together and you've figured each other out as you've been working?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I think probably. I mean, the synergy of the whole group, we obviously don't really get to feel on set because two of the characters are CG. And I'm hoping that when it's all said and done, and you can, like, it's what's kind of great is when I see this movie, so much of it is I'm just going to be a spectator, like, seeing stuff that I didn't, like, sequences I didn't know what they look like, the characters, I don't really know how they're going to look in the end, you know what I mean? But, we've definitely come together and gotten to know each other better. But this has been unlike any other movies I've been on where, you know, you walk away from set and then just the cast goes and hangs out and stuff like that. Like, we're just working nonstop. We've been working so much. And, I mean, we've gotten to know each other pretty well, but because we've been together for 5 months in a foreign country. But, But it's been eye on the prize this whole time. We've just, there hasn't been a lot of downtime to do anything. At least for me, I feel like I've been working every second.
How have you been adjusting to the fact that you're dealing with two CGI characters throughout the entire film?
It turns out it's kind of the same as just it not being CGI.
Yeah.
Like, you're still kind of just standing there looking at something and pretending and saying the words, you know. It hasn't been that hard. I think it would be a lot harder if we didn't have Sean Gunn playing Rocket. I mean, Groot doesn't have that much dialogue in the movie.
Sure.
I don't know if that's supposed to be a spoiler or not.
But
I am Groot. Yeah. I am Groot. Everyone knows that he says I am Groot, and that's it.
Yep.
So that hasn't, you know, because so much of what actors do is just listening and responding. And so when you're working with a great actor, even when they're off camera, it's very easy just to listen to what they're saying, respond, understand that they're listening to you. There's this connection. There's this flow that happens just when you're talking to people.
Sure.
And that's been really great with Sean because, like I said, a lot of the stuff that happens with Rocket, there are moments of real drama and real emotion, and he has committed so hard to it. So when he's off camera, I'm responding to someone that I feel really bad for rather than like a tennis ball or something.
Right.
Can you talk about the physical transformation you went through, losing some of the weight, and did it change the way you are physically as an actor, and did you know when you had the right where you wanted to be?
Yeah, I think it definitely changed. It all, there's a lot of elements that really, like I said, made it easy for me, and like the costume and the hair and the makeup and the props and the sets, and then working out and getting in good shape. Like, I would just like get out of hair and makeup and have my costume on and look at myself in the mirror, and I would just not even see myself staring back. I would see like Peter Quill or like this kind of Star-Lord character. I was like, this is fucking cool, man. It's a third of what I do, I think, as an actor. It's just what I look like, you know. I'm a prop, and I talk, and I listen, and I feel things. I have a certain rhythm to my spirit, all of those things I can manipulate, but the way I look is also something you can manipulate, but it probably takes a third of the performance, you know. That's why there's people that are just like completely dull and have like nothing going on the inside, but when you look at them, they look compelling. There's like great symmetry or something, and you're kind of captivated by them, even though on the inside there's nothing going on. You know what I mean? There are people like that. And as long as they sound good and can link sentences together without stumbling.
Would you like to describe
stumbling?
which actors are you talking about?
Almost all of them. Almost all of them, no. Truly, I mean, there are actors that there's nothing going on. I've met some of them. I'm like, wow. There's fucking nothing going on there. But I certainly wouldn't say. I don't know. But yeah, the physical transformation, that's a big part of it. Like, you know, it's my vehicle. It's my body that I'm inside of. And it can't not affect the way that people perceive you and the way you perceive yourself. Yeah.
Going through the art room, we get a rough idea of this hero's journey. And by the way, the art's freaking awesome.
Oh, amazing. That's so cool. I know, man.
But when the audience and us first meet the Peter Quill character, when he's older and in space, what are his goals? What is he up to before he meets the Guardians?
Well, he is on a quest to escape, essentially. But in the same way that a lot of people are on Earth. Like, he's got like a hope to him, like the kind of hope that you have when you buy a lottery ticket. You know, he thinks if he could just make that score, everything will be fine and everything will be taken care of. And I think he learns through the course of the movie that that's not ultimately where you find true satisfaction with yourself or real happiness. It's really going to come from doing something bigger than yourself and giving yourself up to something that's bigger than yourself. So we find him in a hopeful, playful place where, and he's sort of escaping and a little bit on the run.
Cool.
Were you surprised to get this role?
You and James are both very funny guys. How important is comedy to telling the story of the Guardians of the Galaxy?
Oh, super important. I think comedy is very, very important, and especially in this film. I mean, if we pull this off right, it's going to be really hard for other movies to come out like this. They're going to seem pretty unfunny compared to our movie, I think. James is really, really funny. It's really rare that someone makes me consistently laugh out loud. And he really does. We have a great, I think we have similar sense of humor and a really great relationship and banter on set that is probably could be seen as inappropriate, but it's really keeping us both sane. And I think humor is a big. I mean, this is ultimately his movie and his voice, and you'll definitely see that humor through the course of this movie. And I think it is important. I think it is important and a key to making this movie work because it's not just a straight action adventure type of movie. You know, I think all the best big adventure movies have good comedy, like, you know, all the Indiana Jones movies, and, you know, like a Romancing the Stone, or like there are any type of movie where you have an adventure, potential budding sexual chemistry, and humor all together. It really works. That really works.
Do you get to improv? Do you get to riff on a movie this big?
You know, no, not really. I mean, no, this is not the place for that, I don't think. It's not, you know, I do though. I do sometimes, but it is probably not something that I should be doing, but I just sometimes can't help it. And I know a little bit of that stuff might make it in. And there's a difference between like improvising and essentially saying the words without using those words. You know, as long as you're saying the same thing, you can kind of make it, put in your own words. If it makes it more natural, then that can be a little bit better. But I've been trying pretty hard to just stick to the lines, because you don't want to just like blow a $300,000 craning, dollying helicopter shot or something, you know, because you like wanted to poke a little fun. Like, what are you doing? No, it's gonna take us 5 hours to reset this shot. So there's room for that in some of the scenes, but for the most part, not a lot.
How many of the comics did you read to prepare, and what was something you saw in the Guardians comic that you said, okay, I need to have this in the movie?
Well, when I first talked with James here, I had read some of the newest, the Bendis stuff, the very newest stuff. And I talked to James, and I was like, I was like, what do you think? And he's like, don't read anymore. I don't want you to read any. He was like, this is, you know, essentially the idea was that, he's like, Abnett and Lanning stuff, if I felt compelled I had to read something, we'd be closest to that. But he was like, don't, because this isn't, we're not recreating the comic books. We're essentially just another delivery system for Marvel material. You know, we're not necessarily making a movie based on those comic books. We're just telling more superhero, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy stories, just using a different medium. So it's like, it would be like if someone else was going to, if they were going to release, you know, another Guardians of the Galaxy comic book, you wouldn't necessarily need to go through and read all the previous comic books and pick and choose what you'd want to use. You want to do your own thing. You know what I mean? So I think that's kind of what we're doing. The name and the title and the characters are from different incarnations of the Guardians of the Galaxy, but this is its own thing. And James told me to kind of steer clear of that, and just, you know, he's probably just wanted me to treat his script like the Holy Bible. And so I sort of have, you know, that's where it's.
From when you first got the script to what you're filming right now, how much changed along the way?
Not very much. Not very much. Outside of maybe 10-15%. Hey guys, we're having an interview over here. Arthur.
I heard him say it.
Thanks, buddy. Oh, yeah, probably 10, 15%, maybe. The only things that have changed are things that, I mean, it was pretty solid going in. We rehearsed, had conversations, and brought up any concerns that we had. And so there were changes made, and that's kind of just the whittling down process. It always happens. It's always an evolution. But for the it was pretty damn good to begin with. It was pretty good. It wasn't one of those situations where you come in and think, wow, this doesn't work. Well, how are we going to get that figured out? You're like, wow, that stuff all really works. But what about this? Maybe like trying to just, you know, sharpen it with just a very, very fine, very fine touches. But it was pretty sharp to begin with.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thanks, dude.
Yes.
Thanks.
Hey, enjoy. Thanks. Best of luck with the rest of your day.
Thanks.